Good day and welcome to this discussion that is sponsored by PSG Wealth, focusing on what can be learned from the historic booms and busts in the technology sector. Now, investing always involves uncertainty about the future. The most prudent approach is to conduct thorough research and make informed decisions based on available observations. This research includes analyzing past events to glean insights into potential future trends, but the technology sector in particular is highly unpredictable, making historical analysis a valuable tool for navigating this area effectively. My name is Bdiwa Gabaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and I'll be your host for what looks to be quite a fascinating and informative discussion, and making us aware of what's going on and how we can make use of the tools available, especially historical analysis. Is Adrian Pascoe is the Chief Investment Officer over at PSG Wealth. Adrian, good morning to you. It has been an interesting time in the technology sector. This is something that I've been quite keen to chat to you about. You know, as a self-professed geek myself, you know, we keep our ear to the ground when it comes to this particular sector. Why is the technology space so uncertain, especially at a time when it would seem as if everyone is using technology? So surely that's where the money should be at.
I'm Adiwa, and hello to everybody listening in as well. Yeah, it makes for some very interesting reading, and I think therein lies the problem to an extent as well. So obviously, you know, as we read up on these technological advances and get quite excited about what the future might hold, we see these very big ideas that come forward. And the impact of these ideas could be quite wide in terms of range. And also there's the immediate impact, the first round. But then obviously, as these things are very well networked into society, we see very profound second and third round effects as well. And these things can change very important things from a investment research perspective in terms of what we evaluate as key drivers when looking at these businesses that are so involved in these advancements. So if you think about stuff like consumer behavior and how well entrenched the internet became, for example, and what that has meant for labor productivity and for profit margins. And there's even now with AI, people are also talking about risks and ethical issues. So there's many complicated things that feature into this technology space, and they all contribute to greater uncertainty for what the future may hold.
And it is very interesting just to see, you know, all of these big ideas, as you call them, Adrian, how things develop over time. You know, whether we are talking about the internet boom, you know, some of the fear that we saw at the beginning of the century around Y2K, the age of streaming, the age of data analytics, cloud computing. Now we're talking about AI. There are so many of these big ideas that happen. In certain cases, it continues to be a run. You know, social media, you know, for example, continues to be a driver in the sector. Now we're talking about AI. But you know, from a big ideas point of view, there's always or there tends to be bubbles that tend to form sometimes. Why do, you know, some of these bubbles form?
Well, I think maybe firstly to just pause on that for a second in terms of what exactly do we talk about when we say a bubble. It's not necessarily that we think the technology that's being introduced is in a bubble. It's more how the market is pricing for the future growth of that new technology. And it's more of a technology market bubble, as in, if you look at the best example, is still, we've used this example often, but it makes for such a good case study, is when we go back to Microsoft, who was obviously at the forefront of the internet and everything that would benefit from internet rollout, the world's biggest software producer. Everybody has a Microsoft operating system somewhere they're exposed, either in their personal capacity or at home. And these things are well entrenched. But the problem is the the bubble around the valuation really accelerated in the early 2000s that led to the dot-com bubble for many companies that were affected by that. So first off is to say, it's not that we're not believers in the technology per se, that's a different question. But when we see the assumptions for what kind of growth that could come from this and how we see market participants price in this growth and rally up share prices, that's where the disconnect comes into play. Because often what happens is, it's that famous quote where people say they underestimate the impact that some things can have over the long term, but overestimate the impact over the short term. And that really speaks quite nicely to how we see these bubbles form in various areas of the market. And these are not things that are new. AI is definitely not something new. I've alluded now to what we saw with the internet, and we saw Microsoft, but there were others that were also caught up in that specific era. So Cisco was there. Think about what happened to Nokia, for example, and Ericsson before that. And if we go even further back, we saw in the 1900s, things like telephone lines and electricity, wider adoption of cars, all these things had a significant impact on the productivity of our economy. But markets tend to get overexcited by these things. Again, in the 1960s, we saw similar things with color TVs and VCRs. We know what happened to a Blockbuster, the videotape movie business. We know what happened to stores like the Musicas of the world, all selling CDs, and how that was then replaced by new technology with digital music, etc. So we have seen this before, and it continues to happen all the time. New technology will never stop, and there will always be a new technology replacing old technology. And as this research is being done and new products are being offered to consumers, it will always be there. But again, it comes back to, what does the market say and assume for these growth rates? And what are the things that we aren't thinking about, like the second and third order impacts that could take place? And also, is there any risk to some of these assumptions? And often what happens with these technology bubbles is people tend to look at only one side of the equation in terms of phenomenal growth rates over time. They try to front load a lot of that growth essentially and work it into the valuation. So that creates one danger. And the other danger is there's very little cognizance of what are the risks? What if things don't go wrong? Or what if the business model changes? So we often talk about, you mentioned now in the introduction, if you think about something like social media and Facebook, but initially everybody got very excited around how social media would impact consumers and the way that they behave and interact and what the implications could be commercially. But where Meta has ended is where most of their revenues are collected through advertising revenue. That's ultimately what the platform is for now. Although consumers use it to interact with one another, corporates use it to advertise products, and that's really the offering that Meta provides. So these things tend to move along and transform in ways that we didn't initially anticipate. Luckily, in this Meta case, it seems like everything ended well, even though analysts at the time didn't completely understand how this business model would evolve over time. So it's those kind of things that make you wary, because that could have very easily gone the other way, with the transformation of the business translated into something that wouldn't be commercially viable or as successful. And you've got to ask yourself, when you look at these technologies, is how do you understand how this business will transform over time, and what is the likelihood of success? And if there's a lot of good news priced in there, then you've got to be very cautious to say, how certain are we that the world won't change, that this technology won't be surpassed by something else? You know, something that's happened more recently is, I remember literally 2 years ago, people were saying, if your kids don't learn how to code, they will be ring-fenced from the economy. In every job, you will need to know how to do the fundamentals of coding. And literally on a dime, as AI and language models came up, said, well, essentially, you don't need to know too much about coding, because artificial intelligence will help you to code and fill those gaps in your skill sets if you can't. And immediately now, you know, think about how schools react to that kind of news. So with it's worked into the curriculum, and all of a sudden now it seems like maybe it's not something that we need to work on the fundamentals. So it's up for debate. That's not the point. And I think the key component is just in the technology space, things move quite quickly. And if you extrapolate very excessive growth rates for long periods of time, assuming that there won't be any change or threats to that business model, that introduces some risks.
Adrian, am I understanding you correctly when I say that I guess the basic thesis is that your bubbles tend to be created where the expectation of what a new technology or a particular technology can do doesn't necessarily tie in with what the end reality of that technology ends up being. I'm just, without going, you know, you gave examples as far back as the 1900s, but if I'm just going to go back, you know, 4 years, we've had some interesting trends over the last couple of years in terms of technology. Through the COVID-19 pandemic, we saw technology valuations holding steady and even shooting through the roof in certain cases, because the people were at home, there was a lot more technology use, people were, you know, conferencing, working from home, a lot more social media, content consumption, all of this stuff. And we saw huge hiring, you know, from big tech. And there was this expectation that some of those trends were going to continue. But, you know, soon after COVID comes in, we see a number of tech companies admitting that you know, perhaps we put a little bit too much steam into the system, and then we saw massive layoffs. Not because the tech companies were, you know, in the red per se, but simply because what they thought was going to continue, you know, to happen in terms of trends and usage didn't end up playing out. Does that thread make sense within the context of what you're saying?
Yes, 100%. And I think the other thing is, with technology businesses in particular, the margin of safety in that regard is quite small. So it doesn't need to be a case where the markets are incredibly positive. So if you look at what's assumed for AI growth at the moment, it's just under 40% per annum indefinitely. But you don't need to fail completely and AI is a massive disaster and it doesn't yield any results. You will have severely negative consequences, even if AI only manages to grow by 30% per annum, which is still very significant. But if the share price is thinking 40% today, and we learn in a few months' time it's maybe 30, or maybe something that's closer linked to inflation over the long term, maybe something like 6 to 10%, then the impact and adjustment that will need to take place on the share price is quite significant. So it's not necessarily that the reality is a complete disaster. It's just a miss in relation to what's being priced in.
All right. I see what you're saying, you know, from that point of view. Now, when it comes to moving forward, because we've taken quite a bit of time to describe, you know, some of the situations that create these conditions in the market, the fact that there's a difference between, you know, what people expect, what ends up being the reality. How do investors typically navigate some of these periods?
I think for me, I think the recipe is, over the long term, it helps to be optimistic. So especially when we start to talk about investing in equities, generally the long-term results are quite good. But that being said, is over the short term, you still need a healthy dose of skepticism when it comes to specific businesses. And diversification can help, so that you don't take a very narrow view of outcomes for a specific business that you think is going to grow and diversify into other things. But if we think about how investors typically navigate these situations, is especially now with so much, we've spoken about this before and on other podcasts as well, with so much excess capital floating around in US markets in particular, that's a very risky combination of things to be around. A technology narrative at the back, and that being underpinned by significant capital flows. The reality of it is, if there's so much capital around, if investors can afford to speculate, they will. if there's sufficient money around to invest in these things and these narratives, then investors will continue to support them and they will continue to get more expensive. So it helps to then also ask, but what could go wrong? As simple as that is, what could go wrong? How could this business model not get there? And even if I don't know exactly what will go wrong, is there sufficient margin of safety here that says, well, you know, if something goes wrong, at least the valuation looks reasonable enough, where in many cases, the margin of safety is non-existent. It's literally priced for perfection. The world will pan out exactly as we envisage it to be. The narrative on the table at the moment is essentially a very accurate description of what the future might hold. And I think that's where it gets very dangerous, because no one knows exactly what's going to happen in the future and what the full extent of impacts are and events are. So if you're going to put a significant bet on perfectly predicting the future, that's a risky situation. I think what we typically try to do is to find business models that look like they are quite sustainable and entrenched and a bit more certain, and then look at things where you can say the valuation doesn't look overly extreme in that regard. So if you think of some of the things that we've liked over the last few years in particular, is something like the banking sector, which is typically quite exposed to inflationary growth over time. There's a lot of regulatory backing. We know that the banks are systematically important businesses that will get the necessary support when things don't necessarily look too rosy over the short term. And at the back, the valuation doesn't seem to say the U.S. economy is just going to shoot the lights out for the next 20 years and there's no recession during that period and the list goes on. So if there's still a healthy dose of skepticism in there over the short term, in terms of valuation, but over the long term, the fundamentals do look good, then I think your entry point is a little bit better from that perspective.
Yeah. And as we are ending off then, Adrian, just to maybe put a bow on this particular conversation, there's a lot of noise in the market. I think that's another point that's there. And it's another point that I think you mentioned earlier on. You know, you're talking about quite a disciplined approach. You know, I like what you said, you know, going out and finding business models that perhaps entrenched or, you know, have some regulation around them. And, you know, you talked about financial services and that type of thing. But, you know, when it comes to in terms of what investors can do to improve, you know, their outcomes, maybe you could give, you know, some tips just around people, how people can cut through the noise to actually find, you know, some of those fundamental aspects that you're talking about, some of these more tried and tested business models, and, you know, make, I don't know if we can call them safer bets, but more disciplined bets.
Yeah, sure. No, I hear you. I think maybe first off is to just ask some really, it's called basic questions, but things that seem intuitively sensible. So if you look at the valuation of the business, then ask something simple like how much growth is priced in here? Because you should be able to infer that from what you see in the valuation. And you can see, okay, well, obviously the market is expecting this business to grow by 40%. So a good rule of thumb that we always use is the sustained growth rate that the market has assumed is pretty close to where the PE multiple is. So if you invest in a company that has a PE of 10, the market is broadly thinking that that business can grow by 10% per annum. If the multiple is at 80, where some of these tech businesses are, then the market is essentially telling you that we think the stock can grow by 80% per annum for a while. And then you've got to be super careful. That's a very rich assumption. And if you don't make it, then that's going to be tough. So that's an easy way for you to sort of just do a sanity check on how much growth is being priced in. And then also ask how long will it actually take the company to generate that amount of profits, given what we see in terms of profitability today. And you can even go and make some fairly optimistic assumptions around what the growth could be. And if you still don't get to that valuation, that's normally sufficient to say, okay, well, I've been very optimistic around my outlook for this business, and yet still the current price just seems way ahead of that. So it's moving away from the excitement of the story or the narrative into the numbers, because the numbers, that's the part that's going to keep you honest in terms of your investment. When you start to really look at this these numbers critically and trying to understand what's actually being implied. I think the other thing that we need to appreciate, especially from a South African investor's perspective, South African investors might be looking at some of these AI narratives, for example, thinking that people always chase the best return available. And we think that is risky behavior as well. Ultimately, for South African investors, very few people can afford to speculate. We've seen the statistic being thrown around so many times where they say it's only less than 10% of South African savers will actually have sufficient capital in retirement. People are just not saving enough. And then you've got to ask yourself, do you really have enough money to be speculating on a wild idea? Or should I be a bit more disciplined and make sure that I don't get caught up in the narratives and rather look at the numbers more critically? And I think this is where a wealth manager and someone that has some financial experience can really help clients to navigate these complex discussions and move you away from the narrative into looking at the scenario more critically from a numbers perspective.
So that's where we land today's conversation. It has been a really great one, just talking about the technology sector, some of the booms and the busts that we've seen over the years, cutting through the noise. And, you know, some of the things that Adrian is talking about is to giving us some understanding, you know, of what a bubble is and what actually leads to some of the bubbles that we have seen over time. And he actually shows us that there has been a pattern, you know, over the years and, you know, over the century, and just giving us some insight as well into the fact that we often see a situation where there is a market perception of what a technology can do or will do, you know, versus what actually, you know, ends up happening. Some things end up working out. You know, he gave the example of, you know, Meta and their social media case. And, you know, but in certain cases, some of the expectations don't actually meet reality. And that's where we end up having some of the busts that we have seen over the years. But he does, you know, give, you know, some of the advice to say, you know, cutting through the noise, look at the numbers, you know, look at the business models and actually see, you know, how much growth has already been factored in versus, you know, what could actually potentially end up happening. And then also at the same time, taking a disciplined approach that doesn't always chase the highest return over time. So that's been it, Adrian. Thank you so much, you know, for your insights and giving us a window into some of the technology factors for investors out there.
Thanks, Pidi. I appreciate it. And thanks for everybody who listened in. Hope you found it insightful.
And that brings us to the end of our discussion on what can be learned from the historic booms and busts in the technology sector, sponsored by PSG Wealth. I've been your host, Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. Remember that you can subscribe for free episodes on iono.fm, Spotify, player.fm, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your podcasts.